Good morning. This is Noel Clark, Mickey Smith from Doctor Who, and you are listening to Too Much Scrolling. I'll see you in the future.
Good morning! Welcome to Too Much Scrolling for December 3rd, 2019. I'm Steve Fodor.
And I'm Jingle Bell, the new Christmas elf.
We're just a couple of guys sitting around talking about things that are important to us. Hopefully they're important to you. And if you need more information, there's so many great ways to find more information. Yes, Chip, this week it is finally December. We're through Halloween. We're through Thanksgiving. Now we can get started focusing on Christmas.
So we can put on the all the decorations up, Steve?
Finally, yes.
Finally, and no one's going to complain.
Well, I don't know about that. I wouldn't go that far.
Okay.
Film at 11. Brings us to our film at 11, our movie of the week. You know, it is that time of year, Chip. It is time to remember old times, old friends, and old toys.
The old toys, Steve. Well, you know, as a Christmas elf, I know about toys.
Yes, I do too. I'm still kind of childish when it comes to toys, and I still look at a lot of fun toys and the nostalgia of remembering some of those Christmases past.
So Netflix has a gift to give us, Steve.
That's right. Season 3 of the documentary, The Toys That Made Us, dropped a couple weeks back.
So tell us a little bit about the toys that are being reviewed.
Well, this is a documentary series that looks at all of the manufacturer, all of the backstory of all of the toys that we remember. The toys that are highlighted in season 3 are the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles toys, the Mighty Morphin Power Rangers, My Little Pony, and wrestling toys. There were a ton of all of these. Were you a fan of the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles? I think we've talked about this.
Well, I knew about them. Absolutely, I know about the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. I never bought any of the toys because I was too old at that point.
I was right in the wheelhouse for Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. I remember very clearly when the cartoon started. I was very excited for that story. It was the story of four friends who came together, who lived together, four brothers, really, and those adventures. The toys went right along with that.
Did they talk a little bit about the comic that predated it?
Very much.
Okay.
Very much.
And that was based on, sort of an homage to Frank Miller's work. Uh-huh. Being done at Daredevil at the time. So tell us a little bit about this.
The story of the comic book is an independent, entrepreneurial spirit kind of story where these two guys really got together as, you know, really tight friends and decided one day that they were going to make a comic book that was like an answer to the current trend in comics.
Absolutely. And they certainly enjoyed four masterful painters.
Right. We learned so much about Renaissance painting from the Teenage Mutant. In fact, everything I know about Renaissance painting comes from the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles.
That sounds like an article, Steve.
I enjoyed this. This documentary, The Toys That Made Us, is a really great look at all of those nostalgic moments, those ideas of the past. My little sister was a huge My Little Pony collector.
Really?
In the 80s.
Well, and, as a brony, Steve, some people may be able to share her passion.
Well, you know, it's all about story. It's all about characters. And the My Little Pony Friendship Forever, is that the name of it?
I have no idea. Steve, do they still have bronies?
Yeah, they're still bronies. There's a big conversation in that documentary about the brony phenomenon and those men who love that cartoon because of those characters, because of those stories, because of the voice actors. We talked about the Gargoyles a couple weeks back on Disney Plus.
Sure.
The My Little Pony show has all of those voice actors. That's what we love about that show.
Do bronies have anything to do with furries?
No, Chip, your obsession with the furries ends here.
All right, so tell me a little bit about the wrestling toys.
This was the weakest of the four episodes of this show this season. The storytelling of this documentary in all of the other episodes has a great beginning, middle, and end. The best documentaries can tell a story instead of just being a chronology. Mm-hmm. The wrestling one really falls short here.
Okay.
I did not enjoy the story that was being told in the documentary. There's yeah, there were wrestling toys. Yes, the
wrestling was really hot at one time.
Wrestling was very important to a lot of people for a period of time. Maybe it's still important to a lot of people today. WWE mm-hmm. still sells out arenas.
Sure.
But there was a time when it was cultural, that it was a part of our culture all throughout. I mean, Saturday Night Live had Hulk Hogan and Mr. T on because they were cultural icons. The Toy Story here, it just doesn't have the same oomph.
So tell us a little bit about the Mighty Morphin Power Rangers and how they became to America.
Isn't that fun? Mighty Morphin Power Rangers is a insane concept. Saban, Hiram Saban, and he pronounces his name in this, it's a part of the story of this documentary. He decided on a trip to Japan that these Japanese men running around in costumes and punching each other things were something that he could sell in the United States. He realized very quickly that their mouths don't move. So he could dub in American pieces, film American actors, and then take the footage from Japan and put them together and make these shows very inexpensively and tell some really great stories.
So obviously that became a huge cultural phenomenon mm-hmm. as far as the shows, which led to the toys.
And of course, the toys drove the production.
Really?
Yes. The toys were featured in the production all the time so that they knew where their money was coming for this. This is not exactly what George Lucas did with Star Wars, but that same idea of we are going to market these toys to these kids. That's the point of the Mighty Morphin Power Rangers. I enjoyed the story of this. It has gone through, it's traded hands 5 times.
Okay.
And Saban has control of it again.
Uh-huh.
Disney had it for a short amount of time. They paid Saban for the rights to Mighty Morphin Power Rangers and then sold the rights back at 1/5 the price that they paid the first time.
I wonder how much Lucas is going to pay for Star Wars.
I hope he doesn't write any more scripts. But that's okay. The Toys That Made Us is a great documentary. It's on Netflix. I suggest that you look at all of the episodes, seasons 1, 2, and 3. You got a chance to see a documentary called Scandalous, The Untold Story of the National Enquirer.
Yeah, and this was just released a couple weeks ago, and I wanted to watch this. So I pulled up the What's in Theaters Now as far as the streaming app.
Mm-hmm.
And I purchased my ability to watch it. I watched it at home.
Nice.
But once again, it's one of the theaters. I mean, if you could find a theater that was playing this. This is about the National Enquirer. National Enquirer, if you don't know, is a newspaper. And I use that word loosely, Steve.
Yeah, those tabloid newspapers.
Right? Exactly. Usually something with UFOs, usually something with Bigfoot. You know, something that looks improbable. But I learned a little bit about the thought process behind creating this newspaper. We learned the owner of the National Enquirer, his father owned a newspaper in New York. He was an Italian person.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a very prominent newspaper at that time that catered to the Italian market.
Okay.
When he bought his newspaper, he wanted something that would have a national appeal to him. So he bought the New York Enquirer, which he renamed the National Enquirer. And ultimately, it ended up moving down to Florida as far as where it was published.
Right.
So the process of creating the vision of this newspaper, which was not particularly selling well, happened when he was driving down the highway and he saw that there was an accident. And he saw that people stopped and rubbernecked and they wanted to see the gore. So the National Enquirer, the first movement was to create this gore magazine or this newspaper
mm-hmm.
where if it bleeds, it leads, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, yeah. And he could get his circulation up. And in fact, I think it went up to about 1 million people. But his goal was to get his circulation to about 20 million people. And ultimately, that meant you've got to appeal to middle America. You needed to have a large audience to be able to do that. So the newspaper became sold. Basically, if you go to a grocery store right in front of, as you're checking out, you're going to see these big headlines
where
for something.
Where the candy bars are for the kids and the National Enquirer for the inquiring minds.
Yeah, and they had a deep pockets. When you have a circulation as large as what they had, they could pay for reporters and research. And some of the reporters that were working from there said they enjoyed working from on the National Enquirer because they had deep pockets. And if you wanted to travel, if you wanted to go see something unusual, you could go, but you had to bring back your story. Mm-hmm. So it was a very cutthroat job for the reporters, but also a very lucrative job for those who could make the front cover. So we went from that to something that appealed to middle America, to ultimately this was the group that was started funding some real reporting as we would traditionally knowing that. So the Monica Lewinsky trial became part of that. The OJ trial was part of that. And ultimately, it changed newspapers forever because where most newspapers could have one or two people they were hiring to kind of do the research on the OJ Simpson murders, they had a whole team, maybe 20, 25 people working on this program. They were the ones who uncovered the shoes that had the imprint on the, I guess they left a track. Hmm. And when O.J. Simpson said, well, I would never wear those other shoes. Uh-huh. Well, they found where
he had those shoes on in a different situation.
Yeah, at a football game and in a number of other places.
Mm-hmm.
The newspaper really changed with the death of Princess Diana. And for those who do not remember this, it was blamed on paparazzi chasing Princess Di away. What you didn't know, or maybe you didn't know, was that the driver of this limousine was drunk, so had alcohol in their system. So it may not have been the paparazzi's fault, but maybe, you know, could force it. National Enquirer got the brunt of that. Mm. And in fact, you know, if you were a person who was a celebrity, you certainly were very conscious of what the paparazzi, how it made your life.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a couple things I initially thought about this. You remember when Zach Galifianakis was complaining to Jerry Seinfeld and comedians in cars getting coffee. And Jerry Seinfeld, hey, listen, you wanted to be famous, just go on with your life and don't worry about it.
Right.
We also learned a little bit about where, when they did find dirt, or the National Enquirer reporters found dirt on the celebrities and things of that nature, how they would use that information. And part of it would they would call Bob Hope and say, listen, we found this information on you. And all of a sudden, Bob Hope would agree to a bunch of interviews if we buried the story. So we got a lot of buried news that they actually had information on them. That is truly fascinating stuff, isn't it? So Bill Cosby and Bob Hope both benefited from hidden news.
Hmm.
And they had friendship with Donald Trump. So Donald Trump was always fascinated by how the National Enquirer gained headlines and learned to communicate, and at least that's what the movie was saying, by how the National Enquirer addressed the media. And that is something that was very interesting. I certainly understand how that National Enquirer, who avoided politics for many years, got involved in politics. He said, where else can you have a billboard in front of everyone? Well, that's the newspaper aisle on as you go into your checkout of the grocery store.
Yeah.
So where this really left off and really kind of could have expanded would have been Peter Thiel and Gawker.
Okay.
Because that was not part of this. And while Gawker is not the National Enquirer, they certainly learned a lot about promotion and how to sell newspapers. I mean, this is media. This is selling. You know, all printed media is having the same problems. And it's all how to sell magazines. And you got to have volume to be able to have deep pockets to do stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Ultimately, Peter Thiel had a story written about him. Peter Thiel is, for those who don't know, is a homosexual. He certainly kept that very quiet and was not interested in having that being public. Gawker published that. And because of that, Peter Thiel basically created a situation where he bankrupt Gawker.
Yeah.
And that was over the Hulk Hogan video that
right.
came out. So this was not part of this movie, but certainly should have been an extension of this. I think this is a very interesting story for those who would have interest on publishing and how they had to create their markets. I would say 65, 70 out of 100.
Okay, that's a pretty good score for you. The other documentary that you got a chance to see, this is documentary week, I guess, you saw Very Ralph. This is the story of Ralph Lauren.
And this is streaming on HBO. And this is a brand new documentary. It came out a couple weeks ago. And it is about the story of Ralph Lauren, or his name. What is his name?
Yes, he was born Ralph Lifshitz.
There you go, Steve. And so we now know why Ralph Lauren had to change his name.
Yes.
He had a different name.
Welcome to America.
I think his brother said something about that, because, you know, if you had a name like this, you would change it too.
Right.
So many people think of Ralph Lauren as getting started as a men's brand, and it did, but it really became the first brand that really was a living brand. Mm-hmm. So if you wanted Ralph Lauren cutlery or pictures on the wall or paint or carpet or anything like that, he did it all. And now, he was not trained as a fashion designer. He just had an eye for this. So thanks to what we learned, Ralph Lauren got married very young, a relatively young at age. Him and his wife made a team. He got started as a tie salesman at a department store. He didn't like what was going on there, so he made wide ties, had them made for him. He became a good friend to a tailor. So what you should know from this is if your clothing does not fit, you need to find a tailor and have them tailor it to you. There's your first training from Ralph Lauren. But really, he said early on he had to create a team, because, you know, he didn't know how to cut material. He didn't know how to create this. He just had the eye for it. And so he surrounded himself with a group of people, and they helped build this brand. So this is a story of him as an individual, but also of the brand and how it grew. I found this incredibly fascinating. He certainly created something that, as he described it, it was aspirational, but it was also within the grasp of the everyday person. While you may think Ralph Lauren is expensive, it may be a little more expensive, but, you know, if you valued it, you certainly, nothing is out of reach there. But the other thing is that he certainly knew how to sell glamour, and American glamour. And that's the other thing that you need to leave with this. He was one of the first designers that was from the United States that had international appeal. And many of his things that were appealing was his thought of what a glamorous American life should be like. So whether you're looking at Western wear, or you're looking at this waspy New York look, or New England look, or just anything else, it certainly is very American. And I really did like this. I would say 70 out of 100 too.
There you go. Three great documentaries that go great together. Opening this week, there's some movies coming out that are not documentaries, believe it or not.
Let's go with the best one. And interesting, they look like they're streaming, Steve.
Yes, isn't that interesting? Isn't that interesting that the best titles seem to be coming straight to us through our streaming devices on Amazon, but it's going to be in the theaters first. So theaters first, and then eventually on Amazon Prime is a movie called The Aeronauts. This is... Sorry, what?
Well, I was going to say, this is where they're going to get the plans for the Death Star, Steve.
Yes, they go up in a hot air balloon to get the plans for the Death Star and then hand them to the guy from that Harry Potter movie that wasn't Harry Potter.
That wasn't Harry Potter, Steve, and it obviously stars Felicia Jones.
And Eddie Redmayne. Okay, fine. So they get the plans for the Death Star.
And then they go up in a hot air balloon.
And then they give them to Stephen Hawking.
I guess that's what they do, Steve, don't they?
This looks like a fun adventure. A lot of adventure going on in the air in this hot air balloon race. The Mandela Effect is not based on a true story.
It's on the Bear State Bear, Steve.
Oh, this is based on a thing that my eighth graders keep telling me. The Mandela Effect is a thing. Everything. We live in a different world, and so, there's a different multiverse.
So we need to describe what the Mandela Effect is to be able to get to this story, Steve.
Go ahead.
What is the Mandela? Oh, you want me to explain?
Yeah, I want you to explain.
All right. Well, the idea is that your memories may not be your memories. We live in parallel universes. Uh-huh. And something as simple as the Monopoly Man, uh-huh, who is on the middle of the board as you're describing it, may not be the same one that is currently showing. Because somehow the alternative universes have crossed, or the parallel universes have crossed.
Or your memory is faulty.
Well, there you go. So this is a story of a parents, they may have lost their daughter and somehow are experiencing the Mandela effect. This looks, let's just say it's a movie, Steve.
Yes. Another movie on our list, because we have four of them in a row here. The next movie is called Little Joe. This is the story of a scientist who has invented a species of plant that can make you happy.
Well, it may not make you happy, Steve. And this is certainly not Little Shop of Horrors.
It seems like it, though.
But the it seems like the pollen may have something that's more sinister. But let's just say it looks weird, Steve.
This is a weird-looking movie. Brings us to movie number three on the list, which is called Knives and Skin. This is the story of a girl who has disappeared in the rural Midwest and the effect that that disappearance has had on the rest of the community.
Yeah, that's going to get weird, Steve.
This is really weird. Click on this trailer for Knives and Skin. I don't know what's happening in this movie. Movie number four on the list is called In Fabric. This is, I believe, the first killer dress movie.
This is a killer dress movie. She bought the dress, Steve.
Yes.
And it could kill you.
And it's killing her.
And the dryer is exploding.
And the dog eats the dress, and then the dress comes back to life, and it's fine after the dog eats it. What?
All right, so that was weird, too. Steve, you got one more for me?
The next weird movie on the list is called Daniel Isn't Real. This is the story of a college freshman who is suffering a violent family trauma, and that resurrects his childhood imaginary friend Daniel, played by Patrick Schwarzenegger.
Yeah, this looks really odd.
Really weird.
So, Steve, what we really need is a depressing drug rehabilitation type movie. Go ahead, set me up for it.
Good. It is called A Million Little Pieces. It is based on the best-selling novel. It is the story of a very sad story of a person who is addicted to drugs and his family trying to get him into treatment.
And it got to the point where if he took drugs one more time, he could die.
That's what the trailer says, yeah.
All right, so that doesn't look exciting.
But it's got all the weird things happening that we see weirdness. This is almost one of the weird movies, except for it's explained because this man is on drugs.
All right, so Steve, this summer there was a movie that came out that didn't make its way to the United States, but hey, on December 3rd or December 6th, it's going to be released, Steve.
Yeah, Chip, that's the Playmobil movie, or Playmobil colon the movie. Remember how much I loved the Lego movie?
Yes, and you know what? We had all those toys you know, from when you were a youth.
I don't have any Playmobil toys left, but I did have them in my youth.
Well, they saw the Lego movie was super
was
successful.
Hit. Yeah.
And this looks like it's not that different, except for it uses Playmobil characters. So this actually looks okay.
It could be okay.
And we don't know, but this certainly looks, of the movies we've described, The Banker and this looks probably like the better ones.
Really? You put the Playmobil movie on the list of good movies possibly this week. Well, maybe.
It's an animation type film with real life people.
With fun storyline and some of the fun people that are in it. Jim Gaffigan, Daniel Radcliffe. There's some potential to the Playmobil movie, believe it or not.
I'm going to say that.
Book it. Brings us to our book of the week. We have with us today the author of a book called Pod Life, Podcaster Stories, How They Got Started and How They Stay Inspired, and their best advice to aspiring podcasters. This is Rob Southgate. Welcome, Rob.
I am so excited to be here, but I do want to say, number one, you said a massive amount of the title. It's really just Pod Life.
Okay.
The rest is more the tagline.
Gotcha.
And I'm a co-author. Actually, I don't even know if we'd call it that. What we did was we curated this book. We edited it together. We put the whole thing together. My wife and I did. So it's Martha and Rob Southgate, if you look in the credits. And we collected, I forget how many at this point, 35 different authors.
Wow.
Actually, not authors, podcasters.
Ah.
And my wife, myself, and my daughter Molly all contributed to the book. And then a bunch of other podcasters of all various degrees. And one of them's not even a podcaster. He's a YouTuber.
Can we include it?
But you know what? We can, because podcasting can be all sorts of things. A lot of people get confused by that. I know there are purists that say, no, it has to be played on an iPod. It's a podcast.
In fact, let's just start off with the general question. What is a podcast?
Yeah, Rob. What's a podcast?
Man, you guys have been doing this long enough. You got that question every day, didn't you? I still get it occasionally. It's radio on the internet. Basically, it is, to me, it's a marketing platform.
Sure.
It's content marketing. I can take a subject that I'm interested in, and I can share it with people, but I can also market to those people then.
And it's a recording.
It's a recording.
Okay.
I think you know that. You're doing one right now.
Well, some people who may be listening may not know what this is.
They may get so mad. They're going to rage quit this show. I'm listening to a podcast. I didn't know this was a podcast.
Well, in fact, there's the next part is if a person had interest in getting started in podcasting, how would they do that?
Well, the old joke we used to have was talk to me. I launched so many. I'm executive producer on 140 podcasts.
Do you have a t-shirt that just says, talk to me about my podcast?
Yes, I actually do.
I know you do.
It's one that somebody gave me as a gift. You know, really, that is the easiest way. Or just join a Facebook group and ask questions. I run two Facebook groups in Chicago, Chicago Podcasters Unite. And now get ready for this name. I know it's confusing, but Chicago Podcasters. Very confusing.
What?
But there, I always tell people, even if you're not a podcaster yet, but you want to get into it, join the group, ask a question. You're going to learn a lot, and people are really cool in there.
There's so many apps now where you can just do a podcast straight from your phone. Your phone can be that broadcast station.
Absolutely.
So for those people who are interested in podcasting, what appeals to them about the format?
I think it's having a voice. I think that's really what it boils down to. When you read the book and you start reading the different chapters about what got them into it and what they get out of it, a lot of the overarching messages are, I finally have a place to use my voice, especially like if you read some of the women in here.
Mm-hmm.
They talk about how they felt like I didn't like my voice. I was always told it was squeaky or whatever. And podcasting takes that out of it. They can now just talk freely and nobody's judging them. I think that's all ridiculous. I think everybody has a great voice. I really do. I think everybody has something to say. I think the barrier to entry is gone with podcasting and it allows people to actually express themselves.
Okay.
So when I talk about it as a marketing tool, well, I have an MBA in marketing. That's what I think about. But the reality is when we started this, it was because I wanted to talk about geeky stuff. And Martha, my wife, said, hey, I'm tired of hearing it. So why don't you start some podcasts?
Go in the basement.
Yeah, that was
get
exactly
some microphones.
But
and talk
ironically,
to somebody
the first
else.
Podcasts I did were with her.
Right.
So I mean, how is this different than the radio?
Well, the radio, you got to get hired.
Okay.
Here, I can take my phone. I can record on my phone. I can upload it to SoundCloud for free if you mm-hmm. wanted to go that route, and you have a podcast instantly. Boom. You could upload it to YouTube, and I know some people go, "Well, that's vlogging or whatever." Not necessarily. We can call it a podcast.
All right.
You know, let's not get all ticky-tacky about it. It's content creation. I'm all about content creation.
Now, you've just named a bunch of places we can listen to podcasts. What are the, I guess, how would you normally go to listen to a podcast? Would you have to go to YouTube?
It's whatever your preference is. Okay, so we can get into this. This is the business part of it a little bit. So when a podcast starts with my network, and I'm producing this show, I'll take their RSS feed, which I create. I use Libsyn. That's the one I prefer to use.
Okay.
And I'll take their RSS feed, and I'll go online.
What's an RSS feed?
It's the numbers that make up the location where your podcast is.
So is that where it's kind of like, is that like where you record it?
No.
It's the hosting address.
Okay.
It's where it is hosted on the internet and how people can access it using all sorts of different podcatchers.
All right. So it's a place where the address is, where they kind of
right. And then we point podcatchers at that. And podcatchers are things like iTunes, well, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts. We have Stitcher, TuneIn Radio, iHeartRadio, all of these things, Radio Public. These are all podcatchers.
Okay.
You point them in the direction of your address, which is your RSS feed.
Okay.
And basically, you know, you do that. I'll do it, and I'll make sure everybody's on about 30 different podcatchers.
Okay.
So when people say, well, how do I hear it? Well, which one do you like to use? And if they don't know, you can suggest, I like Stitcher. Try Stitcher.
Mm-hmm.
I've actually made this easier recently, too. I found a thing called Linktree, and I'm using that. So with our show Disturbed, we created a Linktree.
Okay.
Go to linktr.ee/disturbed. It pulls up links, and I have all these different podcatchers on there. So if you prefer TuneIn, you click on TuneIn, and it takes you to the TuneIn site. And if you don't know which, you can do it from you can figure it out from there very easily.
Now that a person, I guess, has a podcast,
yeah,
you created a company to help market those. Tell us a little bit about Southgate Media Group.
So I gave you the basic. When we started it 6 years ago. Mm-hmm. The idea was, I was finishing two bachelor's degrees. And Martha was tired of hearing me talk about all this geeky stuff. She was like, enough. So, and she knew I was getting obsessed with podcasts. I kept listening to Jay and Jack with the Lost podcast. I was listening to One Up, which is about video games. And I was just like I was really into these. And Kevin Smith's Smodcast. I thought, these are really cool, right? And I knew I could do it. I knew I had the gift of gab, that, like they say, right?
Really?
And I was like, you know what? I want to do this. And Martha was really encouraging. She's like, you should totally do this. So I found a company. I told them, I said, look, I want to start my own thing, but I want to be on one of your podcasts to kind of learn. That's where I started. We did three episodes about a TV show, about the show Zero Hour. We did three episodes of Zero Hour.
Okay.
And then the show got canceled. So I was without a podcast. Then it came back. And in the time it came back, Martha and I had started doing, I think we'd even started at this point with our Under the Dome show called Chester's Mill Report.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
I can't remember the timing. It might be that that was right at the end of it. It might have been at the beginning. But Martha and I, my partners on Zero Hour, decided they didn't want to do a show about this terrible show. And I said, yeah, but we have fans. We have people that are listening. And I want to complete it. I want to do it for these fans. And Martha said, you can't bail on them. I'll step in. She had no interest in doing this at all. She jumped into the fray. The only thing she had an interest in was supporting me. And she said, we should probably start our own thing. I think I need to know what I'm doing. I'll jump in. So we started doing this other podcast. We completed that. We had Chester's Mill going. And then that was it. The short story, I don't tell it in the book, but we were walking out of church. I was finishing two bachelor's degrees. I was at the end of my mental rope, trying to get a job, frustrated by all of it. We're walking out of church, and Martha says, I got something to tell you that I don't think you're going to like. I'm thinking, uh-oh, what? She goes, I don't think you're supposed to get a job. Okay, I just went through two bachelor's degrees. I completed what should have been a two-year degree, or actually two-and-a-half or three-year degree, in 1 year. Okay, because they were paying for it, so I was going to use all their money and get those 2 degrees. Mm-hmm. I said, no, that's not right. And I fought and kicked and screamed. She kept saying, hey, look, it's bad for me too, but I'm telling you, you're not supposed to get a job. And the end result was, when I finally gave in and went, you're right, that's when we really started our network and started doing this. And what we did with it was, we said, we want to give people a voice. We don't want to seek out people that are like, I'm a professional podcaster. We want people that have a fandom of some sort. And it actually wasn't supposed to be geeky. I know that's what I'm associated with. It was not supposed to be geeky.
But it could be any subject that you have a passion about.
Yes. We had one that we were creating about backyard harvesting and farming. We had one that was supposed to be about literature. We have pretty diverse interests, and we were trying to build that. And then I was like, oh, I want to do this show about Marvel. Mm-hmm. And, of course, that took off, and it attracted all these people that wanted to do geeky TV shows and stuff, and that's what our company grew out of.
So how has the format changed from when you founded the company a number of years ago to today? What has changed?
I'm hardly on shows. I do a lot of live events. That's my thing. Is okay. I put on live events, and I'm an MC. I am on like three shows right now. People are like, well, you're still on more than one. Yeah, but they're different. One is about American Horror Story. That's one that's held over, and it does big numbers for us. Mm-hmm. One is about It's New Media Lab, which is about the business of podcasting. I have a couple new ones that are coming out that are, one is related to creativity. It's called The Creative Impulse. And then, like, we still do our things as a family. We have one about Doctor Who called Cuckoo for Who. But we're not tied to it. It used to be we were like bam, we got to hit this right on time. It's like, you know what? We didn't do the last season of Doctor Who. We're going to go back and do that at our leisure. I don't care what the numbers are. We're doing this because we enjoy it as a family. So how has it changed? I'm really more of a producer now.
Okay.
And I love doing live events, and I'm looking for ways to encourage others and build them up and teach them about it.
I was going to say, what advice would you give a person wanting to start a podcast?
Join Facebook groups. Talk to other podcasters. Reach out to them. They're cool. If they wrote to you guys, you'd write back.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely.
You know, if they said, how do I get started? You'd have an advice. Like, hey, get a microphone and get on this.
There are a few shows that have been sparked by our show. Absolutely.
At the end of the day, I'd like to be that guy that launched 1,000 ships. Just don't, you know, stick me on your way out the door, but I'll be happy to build you up and make your thing happen.
So what types of subjects lend themselves to podcasting?
Everything. Niche stuff is great. I mean, it can literally be anything. Mm-hmm. I was listening to a show. I listen to a lot of podcasts. I try to hear what people are doing out there and what subjects are hitting. You know, I was listening to one that was all about pathology.
Mm-hmm.
I was listening to one about diseases. I have no interest in that. I was creeped out. But it was great. I listen to true crime. I listen to audio dramas. I love audio dramas.
I do too.
I don't listen to a lot of comedy podcasts, but I'm known for being funny on shows and having it be comedy. But you could do that, and you can make that as niche as you want too. Trader Joe's has a podcast. I actually pitched them on the idea, and nobody got back to me, and then boom, they have one.
Yeah.
It can be anything, Chip.
All right.
Anything.
And so tell me about the book.
I'm actually going to start one called Chip Hessenflow, the podcast. It can be so niche-y. Only you will listen to it.
Excellent. The one-man show with the one-man audience. That sounds great.
Yeah, that's really niche-y. Okay, the book. So Pod Life, here's what happened. So we all know Facebook became a cesspool at some point. Let's mm-hmm. be honest.
I am no longer really a big part of Facebook. I agree.
There was a lot of negativity going on.
Mm-hmm.
And I woke up one day and I went, I need to change the narrative. Okay. And I put out a post about achieving your dreams. And I said, day number one, I'm going to do this for 30 days. And each day I'm going to share a dream, and I'm going to encourage you to share your dreams. Because I believe when you make that public statement, it starts to turn it into reality. Does that reality look like what you said? Not necessarily.
Well, that sounds like coaching.
Yes, yeah. Very much so.
Yeah, very okay. much.
But I just said, I want to do this. I want my friends and the people that are following me to think about what they want to achieve in their lives. And I got them to understand, I would do things about how there's a to-do list and then there's a dream list.
Mm-hmm.
One day I'd say swing for the fences. The next day I'd say make it small. Go ahead and share some to-dos that you're going to do, but do them today. I'm going to clean out the garage. Okay, put that down. That's not a dream.
Right.
I want to have my company be the next Disney. That's a dream, and you're swinging for the fences, but do it.
Mm-hmm.
I had a guy that told me he wanted to walk on the moon. I'm like, if you're serious about it, and he was, then okay, there's a dream. Just put it out there. Put it into the universe. So one of the dreams that I shared a bunch of dreams, and a lot of them have come true, okay? When I say they've come true, no, my business is not Disney. But I feel like the dreams attached to that did pretty much come true, and they're still working their way towards them.
There are sure. people who call you Walt.
But they mean Walt from Breaking Bad, because I've got some blue... Okay. Never mind. We'll talk about that later, Stephen. No, I want you to say my name. So that was a terrible impression. I'm known for that, too.
That was awful.
They're all bad. Although I do a great one of Cricket from American Horror Story, which is so obscure. But every time I do it, people are like, that one actually is pretty good.
So one of your goals was to write a book.
So, yes, I put out there that one of my goals was to write a book. I just said this. And Martha and I both got asked to write chapters in a book. And another guy wrote to me and said, hey, I've self-published a book. I would love to co-write a book with you. I wrote up 3 chapters. He was like, this isn't working for me. Like, it's not that it wasn't working for him. Like, he's a decent guy and everything. It's just he wasn't connecting to the book that we had.
Sure.
And we let it go. So that book is dead. I'm not interested in writing that book. He's not interested in writing that book. That's fine. But I did write my chapter for this other book. Martha wrote her chapter. And from there, and that book was never published. It's still hanging out there. They claim it's going to be published, but we're like, whatever. But we liked the idea that they got these different authors and we put them together.
Mm-hmm.
And with Pod Life, I said, we can do this with podcasters. Even though Martha and I really work as a team on everything. And Molly, my daughter, she's 12. She is a full member of this. When we have an idea, it becomes a we idea.
Okay.
When this one started, it was me saying, I know we can do this. And I kind of had the vision. And Martha was like, yeah, I'm on board. We started putting it out there. Hey, podcasters, want to write a chapter? 1,500 words. And what we thought was going to happen with this book was we thought it was going to be kind of a, here's how I got started. Okay. The first chapter we got back was deep and emotional. There were chapters that came back about people being suicidal. There were chapters about people hating their voices and stifling themselves. What we did was we kept encouraging people, dig into that. Let's hear those stories. You can talk about the fluff. You can talk about the best guest you ever had. I don't mind chapters like that. But if you have a story that's emotional and deep back here, tell mm-hmm. it. I actually told the story originally that I started to tell you guys about how the book came about or how our company came about. Mm-hmm. And then Martha read the chapter and she said, this is terrible. And she was right. It was an awful chapter. And I pulled the chapter out of the book. I took myself out of the book. It didn't work. And she's like, you've told this story before. And then the chapter that I wrote was we woke up one morning and she said, okay, I think you got to write your chapter. And I went, okay. And I started telling that story. And she goes, no. Tell me about why you love podcasting, why you love sound. And that's the chapter I wrote. And I am very proud of that chapter.
So why was it important to write this book? Why are we reading this?
Because, okay, you're podcasters. You sit here and you tell your stories and you tweak that part of yourselves, right?
Sure.
But I know both of you guys. There's a lot more to you than the slice of you that we get from the podcast.
We're not goofy guys. We're very serious guys.
I was going to say there's a lot more yourself. To Steven.
Yeah. That's right. That's right.
Yeah. What'd you get from Chip?
Not much substance here.
No.
All fluff.
Yeah, all fluff. But it fills out a lot of his clothes. A
lot of marshmallow right there.
But the reality is people have great stories. You know, when you're sitting on the bus, somebody's sitting next to you, you start talking to them, all of a sudden you find out, wow, they have a cool story. But they're not telling it on their podcast. They're not telling it because you're here to tell a different story. I want your story. So instead of making another podcast that has interviewing people that you don't know, I said, I want to do a book where we get these stories. And what we got back were these emotional, deep, wonderful stories. And like I said, Martha wrote a chapter. I love her chapter. Molly writes a chapter. I love this chapter. We have chapters in there from people that are part of our network. And then we reached further out, like Dave Jackson, the podcast answer man. I mean, this is a guy that when I started podcasting, you ask, how do people get into it? Go listen to his stuff.
Okay.
Seriously. Mm-hmm. It's great. So I listen to Dave. I write to Dave. I said, hey, we're doing this project. You want to write a chapter? He writes back. He said, all the podcasting I've done, he won a Lifetime Achievement Award for podcasting. It's like getting an Oscar in podcasting. He said, I've never told my story this way. Wow. I would love to write a chapter. And he wrote a great chapter. I reached out to all sorts of people. Now, a byproduct, which I was very uncomfortable with, is the people that podcast for us that wrote, a lot of them wrote about me. I almost cut all of that out of the book. I didn't want this book to be about me. It's about you. But Martha said, let's leave some of that in because
you are a part of their story.
Right. When I said to this person, I believe in you, I want to hear your voice, that needs to be there.
Yeah.
Anything that's like stroking me or whatever, I don't want it. That's not what the book is about. So I hope nobody gets that when they read it. I hope that they feel like, wow, these are real stories about these people.
Well, after finishing the book, what messaging do you want us to take from it?
Use your voice. Don't be afraid. Jump into the fray. Whatever the creativity is, use your voice and be a part of that narrative. That's what I want. I think that's what comes across too. And like I said, there were people, there was one person. Now, this chapter did not make the book, okay, for a couple of different reasons. But there was a person that wrote to me, and they said they were suicidal. And the way they described it is they said they had one foot on the chair. So they were about to do it. They said literally, not figuratively, and their phone beeped, and they looked down hoping it was something.
Wow.
And it was a message from me saying, hey, I know that you like this one thing. I'd love for you to do a podcast. Are you interested? And they said they burst into tears and went, somebody heard me. Mm-hmm. I mean, to me, that was an amazing story. And I'm like, wow, I had no idea. And it was really cool to read that. And I was like, that's what I want people to take. It might be really dark, but there are people listening. There are people that care. I cared about hearing what this person had to say. I care about what you guys have to say. I care about all of it. And guess what? There are a ton of people that do. So you may not get a ton of numbers. That's another thing with our company. We always said to people, there's one person whose show I think has capped out at about 30 listens a month, which doesn't seem like very much, mm-hmm. but they're happy with it.
Right.
And you know what? They're happy with it. I'm ecstatic that they are putting their voice out there, and they're like, hey, I got 30 people that care.
Mm-hmm. Well, on the grand scale of things, most of us can't be Jimmy Fallon on The Tonight Show. We do not get those types of numbers.
Right.
But that doesn't mean that what you're doing couldn't lead to that at some point, or that's even what your hope for the program is. Sometimes it's just articulating your message and knowing that you've recorded it.
There's a guy who does a show, a friend of mine recommends all the time. I think it's called like Creamy Radio or something. My friend always talks to me about it. He loves this show. It's like super niche for like sound people.
Okay.
And he has no listens. Watch, I'm throwing the guy under the bus. He probably has a ton of listens at this point. But at the time when I looked into it, he had like no listens, but he was really passionate about it and he was just doing his thing. And my friend is like, I might be his only fan, but man, I love his show.
Making a
That's
difference.
What mattered.
Making a difference in one person's life.
I remember,
but you've also put it down for posterity in the sense that if I had interest in sound in music, I mean, a sound in podcasting, there's a person who's actually an expert on it,
yep.
who's written about it.
Right, right. Yeah, and the other thing is I love that podcasting opens doors. I've met so many people. I've made so many friends, like actual friends, not yeah. peripheral friends. As a result of this.
Not as superficial as me.
Not my Facebook friends list that I'll share later.
No, but you know what? There are Facebook friends that I have made mm-hmm. because of this that have become actual friends. One of my closest friends is Chris from the Blue Box Cafe, Chris Mao,
yes.
Which is an amazing place. That happened because we were driving by and my daughter saw the TARDIS out front and said, it's a TARDIS. We should go in. She's like six. So we pulled in, we went in, we started talking to the person behind the counter. We said that, hey, we just started this podcast network. We're into geeky stuff. And they went, you should meet Chris and Kathleen. So I meet Chris and Kathleen, and this is literally somebody I am doing life with now.
Mm-hmm.
He is one of the most important people in my world.
Yeah.
When I started Enough Said, the Marvel one, the first person on board, that was Jack. Jack and I have been friends since we were 14, and this is one of the closest friends I have in the world. He's like a brother. And we actually hadn't seen each other in years. We communicated, but not like that. We started doing a podcast. Every week we're doing a show. Do you know, for him, he told me afterwards, it was life-changing for him.
Mm-hmm.
It changed everything because he was having that communication with his friend, talking about goofy Marvel stuff. And we'd sit and laugh the whole time. And people cared about it. And people listened to it. You want to hear a funny story about that? I met a guy who was head of Marvel TV development at the time. I don't know who it is. I was at Wizard World, and I'm standing there in the Marvel booth, and there's this guy, and they're all, like, worshiping this guy. And he's standing next to me. And I turned to him when, like, people walked away, and I said, hi. I said, you're big muckety muck, huh? And he went, not saying. And I said, hi, I run a Marvel podcast. He goes, oh, which one? I said, Enough Said. He goes, are you Rob or Jack?
Wow.
I was like, I'm Rob.
There you go.
And he goes, yeah, I'm so-and-so. And he connected me to high-up people in Marvel to do interviews. Here's the problem. I don't do them. So I did like one interview, and that was it. I have all these contacts, and I never call anybody. I never do anything with them. But when I meet them places, it's always like, oh, they remember me.
So one of the challenges going around right now is that many people feel isolated and lonely. And sometimes they're not feeling connections.
Yes, absolutely.
So tell me how podcasts can connect people.
Well, it does. It absolutely does. There's a couple of ways. You as the podcaster, you don't just record and throw it out. You set up a Facebook page or you set up a Twitter account and you put it out there. And then somebody at some point is going to reach out and say, I liked what you said. Maybe ask a question if you're really lonely.
Mm-hmm.
What did you guys think of my episode? Or did you like the latest episode of Mandalorian? See what somebody's going to write back, and you've got a connection.
Okay.
Building that community.
That's where that is. Mm-hmm. From the other side of it, podcasting.
Sure.
You've got fans. So, like, we have This Week in Geek. We have our Facebook page, and then we started a fan group. And there's not a lot of activity in there, but what I'm noticing is the same 10 people are responding on the Facebook group, and they're starting to write to each other, responding like, hey, I know you're into magic. I just picked up this card, and all of a sudden this thread starts up where they're talking about this. Two people that we're not talking about Magic the Gathering, but they started talking about it in our group. Connection was made. That, to me, is the magic of the whole thing.
Well, I think that you've hit something right there. So when you're in high school, maybe there's one person that shares your passion in something. You head off to college, maybe you find a large group of people. But when you head off in life, unless you seek out those people who have similar passions to you, to whatever that thing is, games or podcasting or music or whatever.
Biology or whatever it is.
The Muppets.
Coffee.
Disney. Yeah.
Then you realize that there are a lot of people who have that same passion.
Yeah.
And you create those connections there. Bulletin boards used to do that on the internet.
Yep.
Or, you know, Facebook.
Well, Martha and I actually came from zines. Zines did it back in the early 90s, late 80s.
Okay.
You created a zine. You put an ad in the back of Fact Sheet 5 or something like that, and all of a sudden other people that were into whatever your weird niche thing was subscribed to you, and then they started writing in, and all of a sudden you have this little collective of people that are into... I was into Micronauts. There was a group... I had a Micronaut zine that I used to
get. You've never mentioned Micronauts.
I love Micronauts. I still have a box full of them. I had a zine that I used to collect that was about Micronauts, and there were probably 10 of us, but I knew people's names on there. There was one about Bullwinkle that I used to get. I got it for my dad because he loved Bullwinkle. I'm like, Dad, you got to get this too. Got that for him. It was that same thing. It's finding that connection. There are so many ways you can do it, but podcasting is a wonderful way to make connections where if you're a passive person, you might just have the connection by listening. Mm-hmm. I feel that connection. I listen to... I was just listening to one called The Grind Bin where they're talking about grindhouse type movies. I love it. I listen to these guys. I love what they're talking about. I'm never going to call in or write in or guest on it. Watch, I say that next week I'll be on.
I was about to say.
You know me. I'll probably end up taking over the show and yeah, here we go. But no, I mean, to me, I feel like I'm part of that community even though I don't have any connection in there, but I love this show.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a lot to be said about that connective tissue that only is coming from the online experience, and podcasting is an intimate way of doing that.
All right, so this book, we'll link it in our show notes, and what I want to know is how our listeners could find out more about this book and also more about you.
Okay. The book, go to our website, southgatemediagroup.com, and you can follow the links. It's got the first banner you see is Pod Life. You can also follow me on Facebook, Rob Southgate, or you can follow Pod Life the Book on Facebook. You can follow Pod Life the Book, although I think it's got a funny name on Twitter, but if you type in Pod Life the Book, it comes up. There's just all sorts of ways like that that you can find it. The easiest way is to follow Southgate Media Group, because I promote everything through either at SMG Pods or Southgate Media Group.
Well, thank you so much, Rob, for coming in. We look forward to continuing this discussion, and we look forward to seeing any other works that you put together in the future.
Oh, there's so much.
And the next podcast marathons that I'm sure we'll be involved with in 2020.
You'll hear about them soon.
I'm sure we will.
I do want to say something, one more thing, because I'm giving you guys an exclusive I haven't revealed yet. We have started working on Pod Life 2.
Ah.
We have started working on Pod Life 2, 3, and 4.
Oh my.
So follow us. If you're a podcaster and you would like to be part of it, announcements will be coming soon where we take submissions and how that works. You can be a published writer if you get in Pod Life. And the other part of that is as a writer, and this is something else. We're all about giving back, right?
Mm-hmm.
So if you're a writer in Pod Life, you can buy the books at cost then. And you can go do a book tour. You can get a table at a Comic-Con or at whatever. And you can sell the books and make money for yourself. I don't get anything for that, but it gives you that opportunity.
Opportunity. That's it. That's what all this is all about.
And that's what Martha and I and Molly, we are 100% behind that. And you ask one more thing. You were asking about these niche things. Martha is working on a project right now that is amazing. It's super personal. It's not anything I've heard on any other podcast. It's super exciting. And this is a woman that 6 years ago was afraid to go on a stage, was afraid to talk on a microphone, told me nobody wants to hear my voice. And now she's doing this beautiful, amazing thing that I can't reveal yet, but it is incredible. I'm super excited. I'm actually devoting a lot of my time to this project. It's so cool.
That's awesome.
So find your passion. That sounds like a wonderful message, and then do something about it.
There you go. The book is called Pod Life. Rob Southgate and his wife Martha put together this great book. Go to their website and get a copy of this and do something. That's the ultimate message of all of this podcasting stuff. Get out there. Put yourself out there. You'll find some real benefits to that.
Yeah, man. Let me end my segment the way I end New Media Lab.
Yeah.
Get out there and create.
Scroll with it.
Brings us to our scroll with it. You know, like I said, it is December 3rd. It's finally time to put up those Christmas decorations if you haven't put them up already.
Well, in Texas, you're not supposed to put them up early, Steve.
Yeah, there was one family that put up their Christmas decorations, at least a few of them, on November 1st, right after Halloween, and their homeowners association asked them to take them down.
Well, Steve, can we ever have too much Christmas?
Yes, I think there is a line between too much Christmas and just enough Christmas.
Well, it's after Thanksgiving now. That means that you should have your Christmas stuff up if you're going to put it up. It's time to start doing it.
Yeah, be careful out there. Don't slide off of the roof.
That's right.
That's your word of warning from too much scrolling.
That's our helpful hint. Be careful.
You know how I keep from falling off the roof when I put up the Christmas lights, right?
You don't do that.
I get my wife to do it.
There you go, Steve.
And I stand under the roof the whole time fretting. And she says, go inside. That's how it works in my household.
So this is the time where we thank Rob Southgate for spending time with us
to
talk to us a little bit about his book.
Wonderful. Go out and buy a copy of Pod Life, a podcaster's story, all those different stories put together that Rob and Martha lovingly just put together and put out for us. We can learn so much from podcasts and from books. That's the way to do it. I don't know, Chip. I think we have enough information to survive another week. What do you think?
Only if we can come back next week, Steve.
I think we can. I think we have so much information and so many weird movies to get through. If you need more information, give us a call or a text. Our phone number is 805-4104-TMS. Our website is TooMuchScrolling.com. Our email is TooMuchScrolling@gmail.com. We're on Twitter and Instagram and Facebook. We're on Spotify and Stitcher and TuneIn Radio. And you can always ask your smart speaker to play the latest episode of Too Much Scrolling. I want to thank you again for listening to Too Much Scrolling. I'm Steve Fodor.
And I'm Jingle Bell, the Christmas elf, Steve.
We'll see you in the future.
Hey, let's go hang some lights.
My wife's already done.
Okay.